world in which movies struggle to find plot. Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Yeah, that's right.
Let's all go to the lobby.
It's Pass the Popcorn, brought to you by Bangor Mall Cinema 10, where they have a film for everybody in the family. Stillwater Avenue in Bangor. Alan Adams from The Main Edge with us in studio. Greetings, sir.
Greetings to you. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Your Monday's going well, I trust.
So far, so good. Yeah.
Weekend?
It was good. Yeah, it was a good weekend. We had some guests from out of town, and so we entertained them and, you know, dealt with the snow, which was, significant, but not the scary kind of significant. It was easy enough to handle. Other than that, it was pretty quiet, actually. Yeah. Like, yesterday especially was a nice, quiet sort of, you know, stay in the house kind of day. I might have walked the dog in my pajamas yesterday.
I hope you had a coat on,
I also
too.
Wore a coat, yes.
Okay, good.
How about you? How was your weekend?
It was good. Damn, same thing. It was nice. It was nice to get up in the morning and go, well, it's Sunday. I don't really have to go anywhere. I'll snowblow the driveway at some point.
Right.
Waited until it all stopped, and that was fine. And it was a nice... I've had some snowblower issues when I bought my snowblower. I didn't get a big enough machine.
Yeah.
But for yesterday, for like that 6 inches or less light powdery snow, it was perfect.
Excellent. Glad to hear that.
Yeah. My neighbor, I have blower envy. my neighbor's got a beast that, we had 3 feet, he could be out there taking care of it.
So
I always finish mine, and then I stand at the end of the driveway and watch him with a glint in my eye.
Yeah, you should probably be careful about that.
I know. If something happens to it, I will clearly be the first suspect there. But anyway, we're here. It's Monday afternoon. We've had fun. I don't know if you caught it, but we got to experience Mrs. Cunningham dropping F-bombs.
I did not get a chance to check that out, but that sounds lovely. And one assumes that it is both on tape and soon to become your outgoing message on whatever voicemail system that you've got. Because, how do you not use that?
Carrie wanted to find a way to work it into a promo for the show. One that would only obviously air in-house friends.
But but isn't that the best kind?
Yes, absolutely. But we're talking movies today. You are here with us, and we're very curious. You saw two movies. You tell us in your tease that one is surprisingly good, the other is extremely bad.
And you don't know which one is which, do you?
I don't. Now, my theory was, my theory was this. Robert Downey Jr. can make even bad films tolerable.
Can he?
But the trailer for Doolittle looks awful. So my pick was that Bad Boys for Life is probably pretty okay.
It's better than okay. It's surprisingly good.
Okay.
Like I was not sure what to expect they're dusting off a franchise, the previous installment, because this is the third movie in the Bad Boys cinematic universe. and the last movie was in 2003.
Was that long ago?
Yeah. So it's just like, it's one of those things where it's like, oh yeah, no, that was almost 20 years ago. It's remarkable because what they've done, and Michael Bay is not behind the camera on this one. He's sort of handed over the keys, mostly because my understanding is it was pretty clear early on that they weren't going to be able to pay him enough, which is the most Michael Bay thing ever. The new directors, they're a filmmaking pair. They haven't done a lot of stuff. They're not a huge well-known duo, Adil and Bilal, they call themselves, they did a good job of staying true to the over-the-top, explosion-laden, fast cars, fast women sort of aesthetic that Michael Bay has cultivated over the years, which was really nice. Look, I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, you know what I was eagerly anticipating? Another Bad Boys movie, because literally no one says that.
No.
They've done a remarkable thing in that they've managed to both highlight and ignore the passage of time.
It's how I live my life.
Do you know what I mean? It's like there's definitely acknowledgement within the movie about how you know, these guys have gotten older. There's no getting around that. You know, it's 17 years later.
Right. What you gonna do?
You know. But at the same time, they also managed to make it so they're still the baddest boys in the room every single time they step on screen, and it's a really interesting balancing act. Look, I'll go through a quick plot synopsis for folks, not that it really matters, but so basically, you know, there's still detectives in Miami: Mike Lowry, Will Smith, Marcus Bennett, Martin Lawrence, and Marcus is getting ready to retire because, you know, he's coming to terms with the fact that he's getting older. Like his first grandchild was just born, so he's thinking about you know, hanging him up. Whereas Mike, Will Smith, is still like wearing the same Miami Vice suits that he was wearing in the previous movies, which you know, Will Smith could pull it off because he's Will Smith. But the reality is, it's still, you know, you're still looking at a dude in his 50s dressing like, you know, Philip Michael Thomas, and that's not necessarily okay. But so they're working, and it turns out that a case from the past is coming back to haunt them.
No,
The widow of a drug kingpin who died in prison following an investigation years ago is seeking revenge. She seeks vengeance against the people who put her husband away and ended her life. Isabel Eritas is her name, played by Kate Del Castillo, and she has enlisted the aid of her son, her young son, who has spent his entire life training to exact this revenge. The child born in prison and raised by, you know, cartel warriors and whatnot. And so his name is Armando, played by Jacob Scipio. And he basically, his whole deal is basically to destroy anyone and everyone who was the least bit involved with this case. And wouldn't you know it, that includes a bad boy. I'm not going to tell you which one.
No!
Because, you know, we got to leave a little something to the imagination. Right. But yes, a bad boy is involved. And, you know, before long, we find that that Mike and Marcus, they're going to have to try to take on this sort of cartel super soldier. But they can't do it alone, Rich. And so they need help. And so they wind up enlisting the aid of, at the behest of their put-upon captain, played magnificently by Joe Pantoliano, who I love.
Joey Pants is awesome.
Who I love in this part. I love generally. So they get hooked up with this group called AMMO, and I need to make sure I get the acronym right. So it's Advanced Miami Metro Operations, AMMO, and it's this group of basically young, tech-savvy, hip cops who use technology and other things to solve crimes, as opposed to the old school methodologies employed by Mike and Marcus. And as you might imagine, there's some culture clash.
Oh, sure, it's going to happen.
Old school versus new school. Right? That's always going to happen. But they join forces in an effort to track down and take down this guy before things get too out of control. It's super fun. Like, I was not anticipating having as good a time watching this movie as I did, but there's a degree of self-awareness that I wasn't anticipating. You know, I kind of thought, oh, they're just going to do the same thing over again. And they did, but they also did it while being aware of the fact that it's kind of ridiculous that these old dudes are still doing this stuff. Just little, like, tossed-off jokes about how, you know, stuff like, you know, about Will Smith dying his goatee and stuff like that. Just little things that are acknowledging that the passage of time has happened, and there are certain realities that no amount of wishful thinking is going to take apart. All that is within the framework of your standard big explosions, car chases, gunfights, and the requisite shot of a plane flying over that big sign that says Miami. That I believe features, is contractually obligated to feature in any film even remotely associated with Michael Bay. But they're just having so much fun. And Will Smith and Martin Lawrence, like, the chemistry's real. You know what I mean? And that goes a long way in a movie like this. You know, it's just like, it's very much a throwback to that sort of buddy cop action comedy kind of thing. You know, and you've got Will Smith handling the tough guy action stuff, and Martin Lawrence handling the quippy funny guy stuff, and it just they fell back into it in a way that feels very genuine. And I don't know if those guys are friends in real life. It certainly reads like they are. Like, it certainly plays like those are two people who enjoy one another's company. And in a movie like this, like, that's, you know, you're 3/4 of the way there if you've got engaging leads like that. You know, and the supporting cast is great. Joey Pants, obviously, among the ammo crew, like, just like weird choices. Like like Vanessa Hudgens is one of them. and the dude who plays Reggie on Riverdale, and this dude who's one of the main Vikings on that show Viking, and, you know, and it's just like all these this weird combination of people, and they're all caricatures. Like, no one's looking here for character development. That's not what we're about. But everybody's, you know, getting off one-liners and shooting guns and doing ridiculous stuff. And, like, it's fun to just go and sit down and just, you know, turn the switch in your brain that's like, okay, as long as you're not worried about realism or the laws of physics or anything like that, like, you're gonna have a good time. Now, I might be a little concerned if I was them that the Fast and Furious crew might come after them for getting onto their corner. But well, that remains to be seen, because at the end of this movie, I'm gonna be real with you. It looks like they're maybe thinking about moving forward with more.
Well, of course.
So and I mean, it made a ridiculous amount of money this weekend. So why wouldn't you do another one? So we'll see.
All right, that's movie number one. Number two, Robert Downey Jr. can talk to the animals. But should he?
Oh, man, I knew that this movie was not going to be great. Like, you saw the trailer, and you're just like, you know, like, oh, this is not good. But then you sit down and watch it, and it's like, and you're like, oh, it's so much worse. It's so much worse than I thought. I can't, for the life of me, figure out why Robert Downey Jr. would choose this as his first post-MCU project. Like, it just doesn't make any sense to me. Like, it's just like he's you watch him, he's clearly disengaged. Like, he doesn't care about any of what's happening. All of his dialogue has been overdubbed with an accent that is indescribable. I don't know, it basically is just like if you took like the entire British Isles and just sort of tossed it in a blender and came out with a dialect like that. That's what he's trying to speak. And that's been overdubbed. So it's like, dear God, what kind of terrible decision did he make, like, during filming? Like, if this is better, like, what was worse? Like, it boggles the mind. Like, the CGI stuff, it's just so much. Like, there's nothing real in this movie, with the exception of a couple of, like, you know, performers. But the vast majority of it is very clearly green screened, and you can just tell. Like, it's obviously a kid's movie, so you're not expecting Shakespeare or whatever, but I would like some sort of soul, like some sort of spirit. It just feels very hollow, I guess. And it's not nearly aesthetically interesting enough to get away with that. And so the end result is something where you just find yourself like looking, it's like, was that a joke? I don't know if that was that. It's like the animals are saying things. I think they're supposed to be jokes. Are they jokes or like, I'm not laughing. Nobody's laughing. Nobody's having a good time. And that's not what you want from a kid's movie.
No,
you don't want it. You don't want it to be a slog. And that's kind of what this is. The basic gist is Robert Downey Jr. is John Doolittle, the legendary doctor who can talk to the animals. And he and his wife go on adventures and talk to animals and, you know, and explore and do things. But and they're so celebrated that they wind up with this wonderful estate in the English countryside, gifted to them by the Queen for their service to the crown and all that stuff. But then Dr. Doolittle's wife goes off on a journey of her own. She's exploring, searching out the legendary Eden tree, whose fruit has miraculous healing properties.
Oh.
And she's lost at sea.
Oh, no, no.
No spoiler. It happens in like the first 5 minutes of the movie. So, and then Doolittle doesn't take it very well. And so he locks the doors of the gates of his compound and just isolates himself in the manor house, you know, surrounded only by his animal compatriots, who I'm going to list off really quickly because it's really important, I think, that you know just how inexplicably stacked this cast is. We've got his sort of second in command, a macaw named Polynesia, voiced by Emma Thompson. We've got an anxiety ridden gorilla named Chi-Chi, voiced by Rami Malek. There's a polar bear who's always cold, named Yoshi, played by John Cena. There's a little dog who serves as his physician's assistant, named Jip, voiced by Tom Holland. There's an angry duck with a prosthetic leg called called Dab Dab, voiced by Octavia Spencer.
Whoa.
Yeah. And then there's an ostrich with an attitude, voiced by Kumail Nanjiani.
Wow.
Yeah. And those are just the main animals.
Did they not read the script?
Well, I mean, I think maybe they just read the part that they got. And it's just like, they just give them the line. Just say these lines into this microphone. It'll be great. We'll write you a check. It'll be fantastic. He's living in isolation, but then his isolation is upset by the simultaneous arrival of two different young people. There's young Stubbins, who shows up because he accidentally shot a squirrel in the woods while reluctantly hunting with his uncle and his cousin, and so he brings the squirrel to Dr. Doolittle to heal. And then there's the young Lady Rose, who has arrived on behalf of Buckingham Palace to bring Dr. Doolittle to the palace because the Queen Victoria is ailing greatly. Reluctantly, Doolittle packs up his things and shaves off his crazy hermit beard and puts on his gold top hat and rides his ostrich to Buckingham Palace, where he discovers that the Queen is being treated by his old med school rival, Dr. Moodfly, played by Michael Sheen.
Oish.
Who probably should know better, but is maybe the only person in this entire movie who's actively trying. He's a typical doctor of the time. He enjoys leeching and those sorts of things. It turns out Dr. Doolittle does a diagnosis and is like, well, the only thing that can save her is the juice of the fruit of the legendary Eden tree, which has never been discovered. But my wife's journal may have a map that will take us to the island where it's located, but the journal's not there. The journal is on another island that is ruled by a mad king, an island of rogues and miscreants, an island ruled by a king played by Antonio Banderas, who is also the father of Dr. Doolittle's late wife.
Whoa!
I know.
This is crazy. It's getting deep now.
Nonsense. Meanwhile, Dr. Moodfly and the head of parliament, played by Jim Broadbent, who's also here because, of course,
sure.
Are actually actively plotting the Queen's demise in order to seize power for themselves.
So it's not just talking to the animals. There's political intrigue.
That's right. There's palace intrigue and wild adventures. In the course of these wild adventures, he talks to other animals who are also voiced by people who are inexplicably famous. Ray Fiennes plays a tiger. And then there's a giraffe voiced by Selena Gomez and a French fox. Marion Cotillard is voicing a character here. And lest we forget, just a shout out to our good friend Jason Preble, who adores this guy, as a weirdo dragonfly who appears multiple times throughout the course of the film. Jason Mantzoukas.
I do like him.
I also like him. There you have it. Like, wow. There's stuff that happens, but it doesn't really matter. No. Like, none of it makes a lot of sense. And, man, RDJ is just dead behind the eyes, man. Like, it's like he spent every moment on set actively regretting his decision. And it's like, well, what did you expect, man? Like, what did you think was going to happen?
Yeah.
This is a movie,
he doesn't need the money.
Well, and that's just it. And this is a $100 million plus budgeted movie that was initially set to come out last April. When a movie goes from an April release date to a mid-January release date, things haven't gone the way that people had hoped. And this is very much an example of why that is, because this movie is actively bad. Like, it's not entertaining. Like, look, and all right, just real quick, spoiler alert for all those out there, because I have to say this out loud. The narrative hinges on a moment that involves, I'm just going to say, involves bagpipes and a dragon fart.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, there.
Spoiler alert over.
Wow.
But yeah, so that's the kind of movie we're talking about here. And that's the level of discourse we're talking about here. And again, I'm not above a fart joke. Like, I love me a good fart joke. Emphasis on the word good.
Yeah.
Because while good fart jokes are great, bad fart jokes are terrible.
They stink.
Yeah. I see what you did there. Yeah. And so I think there are a lot of people who are maybe questioning the choices that they made over the course of doing this. But again, like, it's just a reminder that casting famous people in roles like this, in these sort of voiceover roles, like, it's kind of pointless.
Right.
Like, the big thing is, it's like, you know, if anything, people spend, you know, chunks of time being like, okay, who is that?
Yeah.
Is that someone? Sounds familiar. Who's that? And when you've got this
When you don't have a story, I guess you lean
right on that. Well, because you've got, and there are so many incredibly talented voiceover artists out there, like wonderful vocal talents, who make their living doing this. And it's like, you know, maybe that could have helped. But here's the thing. Nothing could have helped enough. at the end of the day, at least it was better than Cats.
There you go. Alan Adams sharing his thoughts on Doolittle with us here on Pass the Popcorn. Thank you, Al.
My pleasure.
Looking very sharp in your red-blacks hoodie, too.
I'm representing, man.
Darn right.